We are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe DeLeon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
Doing pretty good, Blake. I got to say, and our buddy Chris Phillips had posted about this, I didn't realize how Week 10 had this potential in the preseason to be a really crazy, exciting week. And after everything that's happened, this week is completely collapsed. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be a bad week. I'm sure that there's going to be a ton of really good games. But the one game that's the perfect example of this that we're going to talk about today, the Penn State-Ohio State game is an important game to discuss, but it's not a competitive matchup at all.
Do you think that Penn State can do the unthinkable and knock off Ohio State?
No. No.
Well, why not?
They don't have Gronkemeyer is not good enough at quarterback to do anything to help them win.
Well, how do you know?
What do you mean? How do I know?
Yeah, how do you know? What if he has the game of his life?
Okay, now you're just trolling if you're saying that.
No, I think a Penn State's going to go in here and win this thing.
Okay, stop it. Now you're really starting to cause.
All right, I tried here, but you're right. Look, here is the truth. There are some games, however, that we're going to talk about tonight. I mean, look, here's the thing. I don't think people look at college football in the lens of like what just happened last week. Let me give you an example. What happens if Matt Rhule loses to USC? Does that cool the Penn State saga of him going there? I got another one for you. What if Lincoln Riley loses to Nebraska? Does he have the inevitable fate like Brian Kelly just suffered this past Sunday? They both went to their respective schools at the same exact time, the same exact day, the same exact hour. Does USC say, hey, buddy, see ya? I think people look at the matchups, but sometimes need to look at the storylines. Like if USC loses this one, and they're not really in the playoff contention here anymore, then what? Then I look at Cincinnati and Utah. Joe, I know we were going to talk about this tonight, but I mean, this one's got big ramifications on it as well. What are the storylines coming out of that one? I'm with you, but we need to look at the storylines that comes behind this, especially for games like USC. I think it's really interesting that the two games we'll talk about might have some ties to Penn State's head coaching search.
The one thing I will say in response to the way you framed the Nebraska-USC game, I do agree. Does suddenly Matt Rhule, does he kind of cool down as that likely Penn State candidate? Are they maybe overlooking that because they really want him? Maybe they think they can get Matt Rhule for cheaper because he's not doing as well. The Minnesota loss and the game that they played against Northwestern this past week have kind of changed our perspective on Nebraska and how well Matt Rhule has set up this program. But the one thing I will say in response to the comments about Lincoln Riley, it's worth discussing because you're right. Literally was a mirrored image for what happened with Brian Kelly. For when he was hired, how much he was hired for, he was hired away from a big school, all of those things. But USC is not as feverish as LSU. It's just not. They're going to be a lot more willing to give him time. And I think that as long as they finish 9-3 this year, which is very possible for them to do with the remaining schedule, they are probably going to be more than happy with keeping him around. I don't think that they would push him away.
Or does Lincoln Riley want to be on the move himself? Just some things that you hear when your coach gets fired on the team that you covered, and that maybe my man wants to get back down south or maybe he wants to go to the Midwest. But I'm going to tell you here right now, I don't know if Lincoln Riley, whether he gets fired or if he loses out, doesn't start taking some interest in some other jobs that may be opening. And I'm not even talking about LSU. Won't happen. I'm not talking about Florida. Won't happen. Joe, there are some things that I'm hearing around the University of Arkansas that's getting the ears of a lot of coaches around the country.
Oh, man.
I wouldn't be shocked if in the next couple of weeks that massive donations start flying into the University of Arkansas. How intriguing does that job come when you have Walmart that might be backing you here?
Lincoln Riley being the if that happened, Lincoln Riley is the Arkansas head coach. I didn't say Lincoln Riley to Arkansas. No, I know you didn't. I know you didn't, but that premise would make too much sense. That premise would be really intriguing, and it would be one that would also work and that would fit, knowing where he was last successful, what region he was in when he was last successful, and if suddenly there was a financial commitment to the football program, he could make Arkansas competitive.
You shouldn't have let LSU in this coaching search. Y'all should have prayed to God that they beat A&M, because shit's about to get really serious.
I still stand by the fact that I really think that the Penn State firing is what is going to cause
it trickled everything.
All of this.
Yeah, it trickled
absolutely.
Everything. Yeah. All right, let's get rolling here. Everybody do us a favor. Hit the like and share. Share to all those groups if you're on Facebook and to all those social media pages. You're watching us, listening to us on YouTube. Like, subscribe, notification bell wherever you listen to podcasts. Rate, review, and subscribe. Every Ruffino and Joe show is brought to you by our good friends over at FanDuel. Download the FD Sportsbook app on Android or Apple iPhone. Why do I have to say Apple iPhone as if the iPhone isn't going to be correlated with Apple? Regardless of that, go and download the FD Sportsbook app today. You want quality bets, parlays, you want the most responsible sports book in the country. It's with our good friends over at FanDuel. Any thoughts, questions, concerns, go over to FanDuel.com/RG for more details. And always, Ruffino and Joe is partnered by our good friends over at FanDuel. All right, Joe, let's get moving here. We do have a super chat that's in here from Elks. He says, Jim Knowles, potholes, defensive holes, Bucks by 50.
Here's my only thing, and I know that there has been some frustration that has been assessed to the defense not living up to the hype. Their problems are not purely defensive, though. And I know that Ohio State fans want to get good revenge on him, and they want to be able to embarrass Jim Knowles for leaving, and they're more than happy with things are going with Matt Patricia at the current moment. But
Their issues are not on defense.
Yeah, do you really think that Knowles is the driving force of – not driving force, but a big reason in their failures? Yeah, I don't think so.
No.
No.
Like, for an example, they're 108th in passing.
Exactly.
By the way, almost a little bit less, but almost half your games came against non-Power 5 or non-Power 4 opponents. And so that it should be better based off of that alone. But we'll get into that. Any more super chats here? No, that's not. Well, we can just segue right into that as we're talking about that game. Joe, Penn State versus Ohio State, and you brought this up earlier. In the beginning of the season was going to be a massive matchup. James Franklin's fired. Now we're here. Ohio State versus Penn State, a game that we thought would be one of those during this weekend that would be massive. Nevertheless, it is not as massive as we anticipated it to be. Nevertheless, we have to still play it. Ohio State versus Penn State, when you preview this game, how do you see it going down?
Yeah, I mean, we could just start this off by saying that I think Ohio State's going to completely smoke Penn State. And I don't think that there's a hot take involved with that. There is no, there's nothing surprising to say that Ohio State is going to completely dominate this Penn State squad. Since the firing with Franklin and since their complete downturn, this team has gone from bad to worse. Gronkemeyer, who's taken over at quarterback, he had a pretty shaky game against Iowa. I'm not saying that he's a bad quarterback. I'm not saying that he can't develop into a good quarterback. He was a guy who was pretty highly recruited. He's got a lot of potential. But it's very clearly too soon for him to step into this type of a setting, having to travel on the road to face Ohio State. Blake, I think that this is just a complete overmatch. We're talking about a team that is a little bit of a dead body right now, that is just trying to stay afloat and has been trying to stop the bleeding, and they haven't been able to do so. I do not see a world where Ohio State does not cover that 20.5 point spread on FanDuel. That might be a little bit too big, but there feels like there's a pretty big disparity between the offensive potency of Ohio State and the little bit of juice that Penn State has occasionally when they're trying to move the ball on offense.
Well, the biggest weakness defensively for Penn State is the biggest weakness for Ohio State. They can't really stop the run right now. it's not really all on them. So Penn State is 90th in the country in rush yards allowed and rushing defense as a whole. They're 90th in both. They're giving up 159 yards on the ground per game. Ohio State's 71st in rushing. But here's the thing why I think that this one might be a little bit closer than that 20 and a half that you say. Penn State is top 10 in the country and not allowing explosive plays. Ohio State is 115th in the country in explosive plays. Joe, their offense has been very potent. The question I have is, I don't know if this defense is as bad as people want to, you know, Ohio State fans want to talk about Jim Knowles. I understand that. Can they limit and contain this Ohio State team enough? And can they do something that, quite honestly, they're going to have to do to stay in this one? They're going to have to force Julian Sain into multiple turnovers. They're going to have to get off the field on third down at a massive rate, which they've not been able to do. I do think it's funny, though. Joe, think about this. I found this stat today. So they're 80th in the country on third down rate is Penn State. They're second if you take out the second half. Meaning because of they're on the field so much, because their offense is so bad, they've been getting exhausted. They've been getting absolutely run down because their offense can't sustain. But, man, I'm with you in the sense of Ohio State's just got too much right now. And I think that this team culturally is fractured for Penn State. I think that they have tried to battle. They've tried to do things. The quarterback position, the quarterback issue is clearly has been a big issue. I just don't know how Penn State moves the football, to your point. They're 108th in the country in passing. They're 97th in the country in total offense. And really and truthfully, if they can't suffocate the time of possession and play really good defensively, they're just not going to be able to score enough. I do wonder if they can limit and just contain enough this Ohio State offense so that this offense has any chance whatsoever. I'm willing to give a quarterback after his first start a second chance because I think it's a hard position to be in. But I agree with you. I think Ohio State just has way too much defensively for them to move the ball effectively to be able to overcome in this one.
Right. I think that what you said at the start of this is the important part with Penn State. Their defense is still very talented. And as we were talking about with Elks' Super Chat, Jim Knowles, he's set up this team. They've been decent this year. They've had a couple of bad performances, but they have a lot of really good athletes out there. Zaki Wheatley, tremendous player. He's had a lot of big plays this year. Deni Dennis Sutton has 5.5 tackles for loss on the season. Amari Campbell, who they brought in at linebacker from North Carolina, was a guy that I liked in the preseason and who has done some great stuff for this team. He's one of their leading tacklers so far in 2025. Blake, they have one of the most physically gifted defenses in college football. They have been one of the best teams, as you talked about, at limiting explosive plays to opposing teams on the ground, through the air, both. But where I think this game gets out of hand, and I feel like it could end up being like the Washington game, where it was a little close, but we all knew it wasn't, and then Ohio State separated and the game was pretty much over. There just wasn't enough for Washington to keep up. And if Washington's typically powerful offense couldn't keep up with Ohio State, I really don't think that this Penn State unit will be able to do so. The craziest thing when we look at this Penn State offense, Blake, is that it was really shaky with Drew Aller. And we spent all that time talking about how, man, he just looks off. The accuracy and the timing's not there. He didn't improve as a decision maker. It just doesn't look like we had hoped with the step forward that it could have taken. And especially with all of the new faces that they brought in at receiver. Now we've got a young guy who has to go up against this insanely talented Ohio State defense with all these dudes on it, with Arvel Reese and Caden Curry and Caden McDonald, just in that front seven that he is going to have to deal with. I think it does help that this Penn State offensive line has been pretty solid. They've only allowed 7 sacks so far this year. Gronkemeyer is going to get pretty, you know, good amount of time in the pocket. But I have a very hard time believing that Penn State is going to be able to move the ball. If this game is 24-0, it wouldn't shock me. Like, that legitimately wouldn't shock me if that's what the score was and Ohio State covered in that regard.
Very well could. I like your analogy there in reference to the Washington game and how that one went down. I'm kind of with you there. I mean, look, I want to come in here and break this game down. I wonder it, here's what I wonder for Penn State at versus Ohio State this one. Does Penn State ever just show up? Because you got a lot of really good athletes. Like, do they ever just put their foot down and say enough is enough and we keep a game like this close? I don't know. I don't know if they do. But I see a super chat. We'll get to it in just a minute. Teams aren't playing prevent versus Ohio State, Oaks. They're not. I mean, you can say that they are, but they're not. Like, I will show you the film and break it down for you. They're not. I do wonder later on in the season, whether it be the playoff, regardless, if the explosive play rate for Ohio State being 115th comes back to bite them any. I do think that teams are limiting, okay, what you're doing in that regard with the DBs. But here's the problem with that. You're 71st in the country in rushing. You're 71st in the country in rushing. So if teams are playing prevent, that it makes it worse for your run game. So you can't have it both ways. Oh, well, teams are taken away because they're playing prevent. Let's just say that you're right. You're not, but let's just say that you're right. Then you're not able to run the ball. At some point, this is going to fester for Ohio State. They have been elite defensively. They have shown and have continued to be elite defensively. And now you have a team, Joe, that quite honestly in Penn State couldn't bust a great with two Samoan wrestlers, right? Like, if two Samoan wrestlers came and tried to bust a great, they can't do it. I mean, that's how bad they've been. You know what Samoan wrestlers do?
No.
They ram into one another over and over and see who gets knocked down first. Oh, they couldn't bust.
I'm unfamiliar with Samoan wrestling.
Maybe that's a Southern saying. But okay. They can't bust a great. They can't get push when they need to. They can't hit explosive plays when they need to. I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm really with you on this one. I don't think that they shut them out. I don't know if they shut them out. But I do think because they're unable to move the football, it's too much for this defense. And Ohio State just continues to pour it on them. Not from a point perspective, but it just becomes overwhelming for Penn State here.
And look, to Ohio State's somewhat credit, Bo Jackson has emerged recently as a really nice piece for the run game. Mm-hmm. I just would like to see a little bit more consistency, but it's to your point where, you know, this is Elks' super chat that you referenced that we're talking about. Hard to get explosive when the deep plays to prevent it. The problem, what you just said, like, as you just mentioned, you'd be able to run the ball if that were the case.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part about this, any defense wants to limit explosive plays. And the implication is then that teams are playing Ohio State not to get blown out. I find that very hard to believe. I understand.
No, they're not. Well, go watch the Washington game. That's not what they ran man across the board.
I think that it's a misidentification of how teams are covering Jeremiah Smith, and they're trying to cover Parnell Tate when there's a very limited way to slow down guys that are that talented. And because they're so gifted, and you might have a really good play and you might have really solid coverage on a play, and they're still going to break through. I think it has just more to do with the fact that your playmakers are so good at overcoming good defensive schemes. I don't think it has anything to do with teams literally trying to prevent explosive plays from happening. I don't think any team really plays defense like that. Nobody is approaching it like that unless they're trying not to get blown out. That teams do that when they're like completely mailing it in and they don't want to get embarrassed. Teams do that in the second half all the time. Indiana did that last year against Ohio State because they were trying not to get blown out. Like that, those are the settings that stuff shows up in. I don't think anyone's really doing that to Ohio State at the current moment.
Well, and look, it's not that like the issues here are not like Penn. There's nothing that you can look at Ohio State defensively and say to yourself, I don't know if there's a weakness. Like, let me give an example. Joe, there's not a statistical category that they're not top 10 in.
Yeah.
There's not one. They're first in the country in total defense. They're eighth in the country in rushing defense. They're third in the country in passing defense. They're first in the country in third down defense. They're first in the country in scoring defense. And I don't know, like, when I watch Ohio State, there's just not anything that I really see on film that anybody's been able to try to attack where they can take over. You talked about this a couple of weeks ago when we brought up Ohio State, and just to re-reference it back. They have an elite understanding of what Matt Patricia is trying to do throughout the game. Meaning, there have been multiple times Caleb Downs walks down the line and then bails right before the guy's about to clap, and then he thinks he sees something, and then it's post-snap, there's something completely else. They know what they're doing, and I don't think Penn State has a chance to score enough. They're not going to score enough. I look at this as a game for Ohio State and say, listen, can you continue to improve here? And look, we probably shouldn't be writing off Penn State the way that we are. Joe, when we do that, bad things happen. When we do that, bad things start happening. I just don't see that Penn State's given me no hope in reference to saying that they're going to be able to overcome this one. Maybe the run game gets going. Maybe the run game gets going at an elite level and they're able to suffocate that time of possession and get in. But I just don't know if I see that.
And to this point, Penn State does have a solid enough of a run defense that they could end up slowing down the Ohio State rushing attack. But here's just the main takeaway with all this. As you just said here, Ohio State is the most well-rounded team at the current moment. They're the only team that we can talk about here that even if their run game isn't performing that great, it's still deep. They're still deep at running back. They still have one of the best offensive lines in college football, if not the best offensive line in college football. They have so much talent in every single position group, and they are gifted in every single category. Statistically, they're incredibly dominant at everything that they do. Penn State is not going to do anything to challenge them. This is going to be one of those games where it's going to be a speed bump. I think we're going to watch this, and very quickly we're going to be turning away to watch something else. I don't even know if I'm going to put this on the main TV, if I'm being completely honest with you. This is the noon kick game, right?
I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure it's the Fox noon kickoff game, which doesn't make it very... Oh, it is. It is the Fox noon kickoff game, which I'll probably be watching Vanderbilt, Texas instead, because I don't really have much faith that this game is going to be very competitive.
We shall see. I feel like every time we do this, somebody finds a way to blow it here, and we're just like, how did this even happen? I don't think that happens this week. All right, Dick Buck says, where do you think Franklin lands? We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah. Let's get to that
Elks,
at the end.
Yeah, Elks does say, in reference to what we said, watch Minnesota film. They went man, and it was bombs over Baghdad. Teams were running zone to get beat deep. Tegra at right guard is a probable. But even if it's one game, Elks, listen, I don't mean this in a disrespectful way. Every time that we say, hey, there's an issue here, you push back because you love your team, and I understand that. You're 115th in explosive plays, and I will show you that they're not playing prevent. And then if it's the same, then you can't run the ball. So you're going to have to pick which one that Ohio State doesn't do well.
And this is where the misconception is, though. Elks, explosive plays don't mean deep shots. They don't you're taking deep shots. It doesn't mean you're running four verts, you're just throwing the ball deep. An explosive play is categorized as a play that produces significant yardage.
It's over 20 yards. Right.
So when you're going, you have all these, you've got a lot of really good athletes, and Carnell Tate makes big plays all the time. Jeremiah Smith makes big plays all the time. Right, Bo Jackson has been making big plays.
Oh, and we're not saying that.
Right. We're not implying that they aren't. It's just you don't do it as often. You can produce big splash plays going up against zone. You just don't have available to you as many deep shots because it's hard to take shots when you're going up against teams that are running cover two and they're running deep zone concepts because they want to protect over the top. You can catch a ball and produce after the catch. That is an explosive play. You can have a huge rushing play. That is an explosive play. You're just not doing it at a high clip. And part of this, Julian Sain's been tremendous. He's completing 80% of his passes. He doesn't take a lot of aggressive downfield shots.
No, he doesn't. And you're going to have to, I mean, again, It is what it is there. Royce Pierce, very quickly here, Joe, sends a $50 super chat. Says, good evening, everyone. I hope all you had a great weekend and start off a great week. I know it's been crazy, but I'm still going to appreciate what's left of the season. I'm pretty sure that's what every LSU fan feels right now. I'm going to tell you, everybody was checked out. So this coaching firing has been great for your boy. That's all. That's all I'm saying. But it has. It's not. It's Joe. It's been a long week. I can't believe it's Tuesday. Just throwing that out there. Yeah. All right. Let's get moving here. USC versus Nebraska. Joe, a playoff eliminator here for both of these, potentially, with the Trojans going up against the Cornhuskers. When you preview the Trojans versus the Cornhuskers, how do you see it playing out?
USC is a 6.5-point favorite against Nebraska. Blake, I think that USC is going to boat race Nebraska.
Woo!
I do not think that this Nebraska team has been very good over the past couple of weeks. I think that they have been incredibly overrated this year. I got a little bit duped into buying into them. They've got one guy. Dylan Raiola is as gifted as everyone has hyped him up to be. And I think that he has taken a lot of unnecessary criticism during their recent rough stretch. The dude's throwing passes lefty and then diving also to complete passes. He's doing some of the most unreal things that you'll ever see a quarterback do. His offensive line is terrible. They've allowed 26 sacks, and their defense is atrocious at stopping the run. They're 105th in defensive EPA per rush. Like, this USC offense, it scores points in bunches. It has had a couple of inconsistent spots, but I think with a 7:30 kick at Nebraska, assuming the weather's fine, unlike the Notre Dame game, that they're going to have the same level of offensive explosiveness, and Nebraska will not be able to keep up.
I got to say this about Raiola.
Okay.
He takes god-awful sacks, though. Like, I'm talking about god-awful. Like, he tries to be a little bit too Patrick Mahomes. Sometimes as a quarterback, you just got to get down. Eat the play. And he tries to, you know, do the whole – Joe, you ever gone to a car lot and you see the big balloon thing out front and it's like wallowing around everywhere? That's Dylan Raiola sometimes, I feel like. He's the guy he's like the little thing outside of a car lot that's doing all the crazy stuff. Get down. I'm with you. Their offensive line has not been good. But here's the problem that I have with Nebraska when you say that. I don't think that they're running the ball enough. Meaning, I think that Dana Holgorsen, for everything that it's worth, they're trying to throw the ball and make everything about him when they shouldn't. I get that you're 101st in the country in rushing, but there's got to be times where you're staying with it. Like, I'll give an example. There were multiple times in that Michigan game that, Joe, they got to stay with it. They got to stay with this and take some of this pressure off of him. But I do look at this and say, I look at Nebraska and ask myself the question, are they a little bit fraudulent? They very may not well be. But every time that I've seen you go up against opponents, like we'll talk about Cincinnati in a little bit. Well, we've talked about and recapped that Michigan game. I feel like every time that you've been in the big spot and then you go into a game versus Minnesota, you're unable to perform. You're unable to do what needs to be done. Joe, Minnesota was going high formation, toss dive at their ass, and they couldn't stop it. There was nothing glamorous about what Minnesota and PJ Fleck did. They just got in their boat and they rode it. Puns intended. They have been out physicaled in multiple games this year when it mattered the most. Offensively, I do think that they have some weapons outside, and Raiola has done a lot of really good things. I'm with you there. I do think he takes a lot of bad sacks. But, man, I got to give USC a lot of credit. One thing that they've done has been able to create a lot of havoc. They've been able to get after the quarterback, and it's something that they've done well. However, this secondary isn't great. And this team wants to throw the football around all over the place. And I wonder, a struggling secondary, is Nebraska going to be able to take hold of a secondary that we've seen blow a lot of coverages and not be able to man up? When I look at USC and I say, hey, You're 80th in the country in passing yards allowed. You've been giving up a lot of yards. This is a team that's going to throw the ball 40 times on your ass. Are you going to be able to contain it every single play? It's going to be my big question here.
I understand like the concern because we've talked about in the past how USC's corner room is
that secondary so bad.
Well, I wouldn't call it so bad. Because they've had performances where their secondary has played solidly. They're actually 36th in EPA per pass allowed. So there's a little bit of a disconnect between the yards that they've allowed and the success that they're giving up to opposing teams when they're throwing it against them. But their corner room's not great. I'm not particularly scared by the Nebraska receiving room going up against this USC defense. The biggest, most important thing, and this is very Lincoln Riley-esque, is that USC tops as many important categories in terms of offensive production as possible.
They do.
They are so explosive, and it all starts with Jane Maeva and with Mekhi Lemon. And Jacoby Lane has also been a phenomenal second option in that offense. I kind of wonder what's happening with this run game because it feels like after they lose Wayman Jordan, there's a little bit of a inconsistency with establishing the run. But at the end of the day, Blake, even if that is an issue for them, they can put up points in such an explosive manner. And I think that when we watched the Michigan game, that to me was an example of how this game could unfold, where Michigan does some things well. It has a lot of really nice offensive pieces, and they were able to get some big plays with Marsh and with Bryce Underwood. But they couldn't do it quick enough to keep up with USC. Plain and simple, when USC's passing attack is this explosive and has this easy of a time of creating big plays time and time again, Nebraska is not going to be able to keep up with it. When you have that much of a separation, it is what leads to a team winning confidently in a spot like this.
Yeah, and something that's interesting to talk about in this matchup between Maeva and that absolutely explosive wide receiver room, I don't know what to make of Nebraska's secondary. Because when I look at the teams that you've played, like, let me give an example. They're second in the country in pass defense.
Which, That's inflated.
It is massive.
Let's look at who they've played. They have not played anybody.
Okay.
Good receiver room.
Okay. Well, thank you for taking my take. But that, I mean, basically, yes. Teams that don't throw the ball well at all. Minnesota, Michigan, Cincinnati, I guess, was the best to some extent. I mean, but I even look at Cincinnati, and we'll talk about them in a minute. I mean, Joe, they're the best all passing offense that they've seen, and they're 58th. Like, it's not like that they've been lighting the world on fire through the air. I do feel like it's inflated. And I don't think that this secondary is going to be able to hold up the entire time here. And we'll go from there and see what happens. Now, people will say, well, Blake, why did you lead this in as a playoff eliminator? Nebraska's got three losses. You must have forgot about strength of schedule, 9-3 teams. Like, any kind of chaos can happen here. Look at what the ACC is going through at the current moment. This is it. This is the last shot that you have. I just think that this wide receiver room for USC is just too much for them. They're going to continue to pour on Mekhi Lemon, Lane. Dude, I'm going to keep talking about this. I'm going to keep saying this to you until I'm blue in the face, until you put him higher on your draft board. This McCree kid at tight end can play. He can block really well. He's really good in pass reception. I know he had a critical fumble a couple of weeks ago. He is really good. They have a lot of weapons. My question is, how does Maeva respond after having some bad decisions that went against him against Notre Dame? And I think he's going to be able to respond. Joe, by the way, this rushing attack for USC, they're top 25 in the country too, going up against a unit, as you brought up earlier, that's really bad stopping the run. They're 89th in the country in run defense. I think that I don't know if Nebraska is going to be able to slow him down here.
I didn't realize McCree was as old as he was, by the way. He's 23 years old. I didn't realize that. Yeah. I do like him as well, dude. I think he's very underrated, and he's somebody that I'm going to get eyes on.
The blocking on the end line of scrimmage. Listen, when you talk about run game, especially the way that they want to run the counter a lot, dude, he's lighting human beings up. I mean, he is getting serious. I'm not saying a tight end is the big thing for the run game. But when you have a tight end that can take on a defensive end when you're running a counter, I mean, he's getting push. And that's the part for me that I'm like, dude, I think USC from an offense perspective has a different mentality in running the football. They are really good at receiver. I mean, they're just they do a lot of the small things right now very well that I don't know if Nebraska can handle.
No, and this is all what I keep coming down to is I think that this USC team is a lot better than people give it credit for. They have a bad performance against Illinois with a really difficult spot to have to play at the time slot that they had to play at. And the Notre Dame game was just not a game that they were built to win. It was raining. It was just an awful weather situation that you're not used to. And also you were going up against a team that's much better than yours. I think we saw that Notre Dame team was more equipped to win that game than they were. But there still is. Damn it. I thought I went the whole show without coughing. This is, as you said, a legitimate shot, though, to set up a path to the playoff for USC. I think Nebraska's out of it. I think that they're completely out of the mix.
This
game, once USC wins, I'm that confident that USC wins this game. They have Northwestern, they have Iowa. Both those games are at home. Then they get UCLA to end the season. The one game that is going to be really tricky for them and is going to be the decider is the game against Oregon. And if you lose that Oregon game close, you will be in the mix, but probably won't get in. But man, could you imagine if they beat Oregon? If they manage to pull that thing off and if they beat Oregon, what that would do to the Big Ten standings? We would have a shitload of 10-2 Big Ten teams.
Well, I have a question. What would be Oregon's biggest win?
By then they would realistically have had a win against Washington. I know.
Yeah.
So Oregon might get knocked out in that world. Seriously.
I mean, we'll see. I'm not picking against Dan Lanning. Maybe Dan Lanning.
I think Oregon's going to win that game. But
what if Dan Lanning's focusing on LSU? You know, like you just never know. I mean, you never really know. I'm clearly joking there. I do think that they roll here. I do think that when you talk about that, look, here's the truth. I can't believe after what we went through last year that we're going to come in here and say this. Here's just the truth. They're going to get out physicaled by USC. That's the part where I think, look, people want to talk about Lincoln, make fun of him. They are physically running the ball at an alarming rate. And I don't think people really kind of saw that part of their game being brought up. And this Nebraska team just is not good in stopping the run.
Just to add to that, their defensive line has been incredibly physical too. The performance that they had against Notre Dame was not indicative of what they are as a team. They have some really good defensive line talent. And to that point, that is one of the most stark, shocking things about Nebraska. You would expect them to be physically tough and imposing. They're none of that. They don't have any of that. They're not showing any of that stuff in any of these games, which has been shocking. Out physicaled on their offensive line. They're getting run all over on defense. That is, I think, the biggest separator with this that nobody's talking about. USC is the more physical team in this matchup.
USC is going to be the more physical team. And look, Nebraska, what's going to happen? I don't know. We'll see. All right, Joe, let's move on here. Cincinnati versus Utah, battle in the Big 12 here. Utah trying to bounce back. Cincinnati having a really good season, depending on where people put them in the preseason. When you look at this Big 12 matchup, how do you see it going down?
Man, I am extremely excited, Blake, about this Cincinnati-Utah game because nobody has really talked much about the Cincinnati team until now. They got that win against Iowa State, and they've just continued to rise. There is a very legitimate shot for this Cincinnati team to be the Big 12 representative in the college football playoff. And as great as their run game has been with Tawi Walker, who runs hard as shit, and Evan Poyer, who's also a really great running back. Both those guys are over 450 yards. The credit for Cincinnati's success is Brennan Sorsby. Sorsby has quietly risen over the past few weeks, past month, a little bit longer than that, to a spot where he is going to potentially be a top 50 pick and quietly should be in the conversation for the Heisman. I don't think he wins the award, but statistically, he has been one of the best quarterbacks in college football. This season, he has 20 touchdowns. He's got one pick. Tremendous player. And he's also an awesome runner as well. This is 425 rush yards in the season for him. Blake, I really like... Go ahead. No, go ahead. What were you going
to say? He is so fun to watch. He is just so fun to watch in everything that he does. Some of the runs that he makes and some of the guys that he eludes and some of the decisions he makes are incredible. But he has been so fun to watch this year.
Dude, he is a baller. He's got all the tools that you look for in a premier quarterback. You're like watching him and you're shocked to find out that he's juking guys out. He could just do everything so well. And there's a reason why he's starting to get some.
Well, and then he's running away from DBs against Iowa State a couple of weeks ago. You're like, well, hold on. Like, they're side by side and he's visibly running away. This dude, I got to be real with you. Cincinnati's in a situation here where, look, if he continues to play the way that he's playing, look, you know what they remind me of? Can I tell you what it reminds me of a little bit?
What?
What were we seeing from Sam Leavitt a year ago when he was making ridiculous throws and plays? Team that everybody counted out in the Big 12 last year.
Yeah.
They're not going to do good. They're not going to be good. Here he comes out of nowhere, and he's lighting it up. What's that song by whatever that band is? Light 'em up, up, up. And he's lighting up the DB room. And I'm like, what is going on? It reminds me of what happened in the Big 12 last year with Sam Leavitt.
I think that's a really good example, too, because he's a tremendous athlete. He's a big-time playmaker. And he is playing at a top quarterback level in the conference, in the country. Here's the big issue, though, with Cincinnati, though, and for this matchup specifically. Game is at Utah. Utah is an 8.5-point favorite. It is a 10 o'clock kick. Cincinnati's defense is atrocious. It's bad. They are giving up a lot of big plays. They're 89th in defensive EPA per pass, 82nd in EPA per rush allowed. I don't know what the situation is with Devin Dampier, though. That is the one thing that needs to start this conversation because he didn't play against Colorado. Bird Ficklin, which is an awesome quarterback name. He started at quarterback, the young guy who had an awesome game. And I think that he could keep this Utah offense afloat. But is Dampier going to play after it seemed like he might play last week?
Right.
That situation, I think, is the most important to monitor because if we get Dampier versus Sorsby, this game is incredibly exciting. And Utah definitely has an edge. But if it's Ficklin versus Sorsby, I think that there is a significant difference between the two quarterbacks.
You know, Joe, the one thing, and you talk about Dampier, you know, offensively, they've done some really good things. They've run the football very effectively. They're fifth in the country in rushing. You know, Dampier's been a big part of that. You're right. Do they play? You've been really big on their offensive line. But here's the thing when I look at this game that's the biggest glaring weakness for me, okay, when I talk about this game. Utah is 56th in the country in defending the run. They have had moments and times, Joe, where they have had issues in contain. Ask me about BYU. Ask me about Texas Tech. This ain't the week to be able to be losing contain. This is not the week to not be out of alignment and out of assignment because if you do, you're going to give up gash plays. They have been good against the opponents that they play, and they've done a really good job at overcoming some situations. You better play fundamentally sound this week if you're Utah defensively, which they normally do. But I look at them and ask, Joe, against the two biggest games that they've played, I feel like I've seen a team defensively in moments and times that get out of alignment and get out of assignment. Well, Blake, we picked the ball off a couple of times against Texas Tech. Yeah, well, then Will Hammond came in and punched you right in the mouth and you didn't have a response. Joe, they ran the ball right at him and they punched him in the mouth. Then you look at the second half of the BYU game. This is not a quarterback that you can be out of assignment and be out of alignment on, or you're going to get gashed and you're going to be like, brother, I feel like we've been doing really good. We've been dominating in some situations. And you look up and he's running for another first down. You're like, how in the hell did we get here?
I think one part to add to this, that if we're talking about like how this game shakes out, strangely, Utah's defense is not good at stopping the run. 104th in EPA per rush allowed. They have had instances this year where they've given up some very big plays. Didn't do a great job of it against BYU. The Texas Tech game was a really good example, as you just talked about there. Cameron Dickey had a bunch of really big plays. Will Hammond had a bunch of really big plays. The Texas Tech game actually might be a really good example that we can turn to for context of what could happen in this game. Albeit it is a bad body clock situation, and Utah Stadium at night is not a situation that you want to step into at all.
I was going with that next.
But you have a team that is a three-headed monster when it comes to running the football, a quarterback and two running backs. I just do kind of wonder, is Cincinnati one of the worst matchups that they could be seeing? Because when they can't, even if they're having issues, if they were theoretically have issues getting things going with their two running backs, Sorsby is a good enough of a runner that he's going to be able to produce on his own.
Joe, what travels in college football?
Defense.
And a run game. All right. There is some things that worry about me with Cincinnati here, too. If there is a remote chance in hell that this Utah team, whether it be Dampier or whoever it is, this Cincinnati secondary has gotten roasted in moments and times. Roasted. They're 76th in the country in passing yards allowed, and they're giving up about 227 yards per game through the air. But here's the thing with Cincinnati. Joe, they're so bend but don't break. Teams aren't scoring on them in the red zone. You have one of the top 25 teams in the red zone is Cincinnati and a top 30 scoring defense. Utah, you're going to be able to get yards. The most critical thing this week is teams have had, whether it be Nebraska, Iowa State, regardless of who it is, teams have had issues getting seven. So you want to know why Cincinnati has been able to do things? Well, the run game for them in the red zone has been elite, and they have been playing bend don't break defense. Joe, when they get inside that 20, there have been moments and times where they've been locked down. Again, ask Iowa State. They couldn't do anything when they got in the red zone. They could move the ball. They got inside the 20, and everything was locked down. It is going to be imperative this week when you get inside that 20-yard line that you're able to convert, because this team does not give up a lot of points, especially and critically in the red zone.
That's really interesting context, because I actually didn't even write that down. I didn't even register that they're giving up all these big plays. If you watch the Baylor game, it kind of showed up in spots there, and it's shown up different areas.
I'm glad you brought – they locked them down in the red zone. Locked them down. You're talking about four field goals that came inside the 20. Bro, yeah. I mean, they're giving up a lot of yards, but they're not giving up points. Like, Joe, listen, they're 65th in the country in 65th in the country in rushing defense. They're 71st in total yards. They're 76th in pass defense, and yet they're top 30 in scoring. So then I go and I'm like, bro, well, so what's happened in all these games in the red zone? Field goal, field goal, field goal, touchdown. Field goal, field goal, field goal, touchdown. I mean, it's just, it's really impressive when I look at them and like, all right, it shows me how well coached they are. And I don't think that's been talked about with the Cincinnati team.
No, and that is, it's hard to just like really buy into a team defensively though when they do that, because I feel like at a certain point.
Barry Odom galore, baby.
I feel like at a certain point when you live by that, you die by that.
At a certain point,
it breaks free, it breaks through. This is arguably the best offense that Cincinnati has faced. I think the Utah offense is better than the Iowa State one. The other teams that they've beaten,
very fair.
Kansas.
The only thing I would say is Dampier going?
That is what it's going to really spark all of this, as I said earlier. What is his situation? Bird Ficklin was a great player for them against Colorado. He had a ton of big plays, and he's like, what? He looks and plays like Dampier's little brother. It's funny. Like, I thought for a second there, I'm like, is Dampier playing or is it Ficklin? Who's in right now? Because he's super elusive. He's fast. He's on the smaller side. we could be talking about him in a couple of years as like a great player for Utah. Maybe it doesn't really hurt them not having him, but the Dampier availability is something that we probably won't know until Friday. It should be a really important swinging point in this game.
I don't know. See, here's the thing. I have built myself when I've watched both of these teams that I think Cincinnati is going to go in there and do it. But before we move on here, I got to get to this.
Okay.
Spooky shit in October happened in Utah, man. Spooky, spooky.
Whoa, wait, but it's going to be November.
Oh, shit, it is going to be November. No, if you have 3 days after Halloween, you're fine. It's a three-day window of spookiness. It's a three.
I guess that makes sense. I guess
a three-day window of spookiness can go on. I get what you know what I'm saying though. Weirder shit has happened in Utah at night at home. This one's gonna be fun, man. You better keep your eyes on this one when you're watching at night. So we'll see. Anything else on this game?
No, I do want to get to the super chat that Dick Buck sent us about.
Dick Buck says, where do you think that James Franklin's going to land? He also says that there's Ohio State Buckeyes are going to cover.
I've been thinking about this a bit more lately. I feel like James Franklin would be perfect at Virginia Tech. I really do. And I think that for both sides, it's a perfect hire. If he has an aspiration to jump back up to a bigger school, he can totally do it. He is a coach who has had established success at a program of a slightly lower level when he was at Vanderbilt. Virginia Tech now is saying that they've got a significant financial commitment coming to football, and it's in a conference where he can have sustained success. And the expectation isn't for him to win a national title. If he goes 10-2 every single year at Virginia Tech, that's great. I mean, that was what Beamer did. That was what Frank Beamer did for decades.
I gotta say something very quickly.
Okay.
I think it's all BS.
What is?
I think that his name floating around here and all this, there's interest here with Virginia Tech. I think it's BS. He's got a clause in his contract that he's got to look for work.
And you think he's just going to sit out?
I feel like that there's a part that he's trying to live up to the contract and the clause in the contract that says you got to look for work. Because listen, he doesn't go to Fox, that was a Big Ten affiliate, to do a media outlet with. He goes to ESPN. Like, I feel like you've been in the Big Ten for how long? You've been around these Fox guys for how long? And you went to ESPN with Nick Saban, who has no ties to the Big Ten at the current moment, and reference that? Why? I there is a clause that says that he's got to look for work, and it sets off if he goes to another school, all that kind of stuff. I get all of it. Look, I don't know James Franklin, so I'm completely just speculating here. I think he's living up to that because the next week he's at ESPN looking for work. And then now all of a sudden his name's popping up in everywhere. Oh, like Virginia Tech, man, Virginia Tech's really looking into James Franklin here. And I'm like, I don't know if I buy that.
Well, but do you think that he wants to go into TV? Like, what do you think he's going to take time off? And then
I got
to
be real with you.
Job?
I got to be real with you. If I'm him, I'm starting a podcast, clearly, because that's what I did, but I also sit here and say to myself too that he was actually really good when he did his media spots. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. Something with him and Virginia Tech doesn't jive with me. I don't.
Why though?
It doesn't feel Virginia Tech. It doesn't feel lunch pail to me. They walk into the stadium with a lunch pail. James Franklin's lunch pail to you?
Yeah, I think that he is.
I absolutely think I can't see it.
I think that there's a fit there. I think that there could be a fit there.
I don't see it. I don't think it jives, man. I really don't. And listen, I am 1,000% speculating. Here's what I do know. He ain't going to Arkansas when everybody keeps tagging him to Arkansas. Ain't happening. They'll hire Bobby Petrino before that happens. The Florida thing's not going to happen unless they get really down their list. So when we talk about, listen, here's how I see it going down. I think regardless of order, LSU, Florida, Penn State, LSU, Florida, whoever gets their coaches and however it goes down. Joe, I think that there's going to be other openings. Like, what if Eli Drinkwitz takes the Florida job because Lane Kiffin goes elsewhere or stays at Ole Miss? Like, there are going to be other openings that are better than Virginia Tech right now.
That's not a bad point, but he'd have to wait, and if he misses the swing, then he ends up like Dan Mullen, who had to take the UNLV job for a year.
Yeah, but that the Dan thing was different. Dan set out for years, and he didn't really want to get back into it.
I guess that's fair.
And in fairness, Dan Mullen was getting paid like $12 million a year at ESPN. I mean, yeah, let me just tell you something. If I don't have to work throughout the week and just prep for one football game a week and I get paid like $12 million a year to do it, I'm doing it.
I don't know if he was making that much money.
Oh, he was making a shitload of money. Look it up.
I don't know if I could find that.
AI Google doesn't have it for you?
No. I don't think he's making that much money.
Okay.
Because like Tony Romo's contract is like
$20 million.
I'm gonna see if I can find it.
Now would we have dead air?
He makes $18 million. I don't know. Okay. But Dan Mullen wasn't.
I'm just making a point here. We're right now. Cut it in half. $6 million to sit at home and prep for one game a week.
Besides the point though,
Virginia, sense to me.
I don't think any of these big programs are going to want Franklin. I think he needs to take a.
Missouri's Virginia a big Tech program. Missouri ain't no big program.
I know it's not, but I wouldn't shock me if Missouri doesn't have higher aspirations. But Missouri would make sense. I think a lot of people are going to be cooled on Franklin.
They probably will be. And it might be for the best interest for him to sit out a year or two. Who knows here? I don't know. All right. Any more super chats here?
No.
CFB Nerd says, love how you guys pivot away from the debates once facts and not your bias is brought into the conversation.
I don't know. What do we care? It's the counter of that. When we're not saying things that you want to hear, we're automatically biased. When we're saying things you want to hear, we're automatically
asked
the biggest supporters. Yeah, it's right. We can't please everybody.
Give me a break. All right. We'll see you again tomorrow. Y'all have a blessed night. Peace.
Out of the shadows of Paramount Mountain, three heroes level up. Axe, Tyrus, and Gilius battle against the evil giant Death Adder to save the kingdom of Uria from so much peril. Laser knives, ornery dwarves, bad brothers, sentient skeletons, sword scorpions, death armor, fire, imp, this thing, that thing, whatever that is, so much peril and heroes.
This is just the beginning of the story of Hampton Square.
Golden Axe, new series streaming September 16th on Paramount+.